You're listening to episode 32, brought to you by PlateJoy. Welcome to Cultivating the Lovely, the podcast. This is a podcast all about pouring the labor, care, and study into the roles that God has given us as wives, moms, women, and His children. It is meant to inspire us to be living with passion, intention, beauty, and delight in the everyday moments right where we're at. I'm your hostess, Mackenzie Monroe from BoldTurquoise.com and CultivatingTheLovely.com. And today I am so excited to be bringing you an episode that I have been teasing for a really long time. But before we jump into that, I do want to remind you guys that the Lovely Homeschool course, the brand new course all about planning and prepping for a bold and gracious year, is soon coming out. So you guys want to make sure that you hop over to boldturquoise.com/TLHC to get signed up so that you can find out exactly when it's going on sale. We're going to have about a week-long sale where it's a little bit cheaper, and then we're going to be planning together all summer long in a Facebook group while you guys are taking the course to make sure that you are off to the best start that you can possibly be on next year. Even if you're a veteran homeschooler, I think that this course has something for you. So be sure to head over there and get signed up so you don't miss out. Now, you guys, this episode with my very good friend, Katie Duckett, is full of so much goodness. You guys are probably going to want to listen to it over and over again like I am. I'm taking notes on my own podcast because she is full of so much wisdom and so much grace. And I think a lot of us who've gotten really frustrated with our homeschools are going to find a ton of freedom in what she has to offer. Now, even if you aren't a homeschooler, I think that Katie has a lot of wisdom for just how we can be relationally dealing with all kinds of things with our kids and making sure we're always putting that first. So I really hope that you enjoy today's episode and hop over to Katie's Instagram as we talk about in the show, because you will be blown away by the beauty and the goodness there. So I'm not going to tease this any longer. I just want to jump right in with my good friend, Katie Duckett. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Mackenzie.
I'm so excited to have you here because, well, you're one of my favorite people, but I just love what you've done with your homeschool and with your children and your family, and it's been so inspiring. And so I'm just so excited to get to share that with everybody. I could literally burst.
Oh, well, don't burst.
Well, I feel like I've been teasing it on the podcast for like 6 months. Like, I'm going to get my friend Katie to come on and we're going to talk about the fabulous way that she homeschools. And so it's finally happening.
It is happening.
Yes.
Here we are.
Tell us a little bit about your family and what you're up to and where people can find you.
Okay. So this is my 7th year of homeschooling, and my oldest is 12. He's a 6th grader, and my second, he just turned 11, and he's a 5th grader, and then I have a 6-year-old kindergartner and a 2-year-old who thinks she does all those things.
Yes, of course. Yes. And she's adorable doing it.
Yes, yes. Well, we can say that because our girls are such good friends, and they're
yes.
good buddies.
They know each other well, and they act like puppies and coffee shops and all that kind of thing.
They sure do.
Yes.
They sure do. Yeah. So that's what I'm working with at home. And my public Instagram feed is May These Arrows Fly. And each word is separated by an underscore.
And we'll make sure to have that in the show notes so people can just click on it and get right there. But seriously, you guys, you want to run to this Instagram account right now because it's beautiful, and it really does depict your homeschool, and I think it's so inspiring to see that homeschooling can be what we all want it to be, but a lot of people don't know how to make it that way, and you make it accessible. And so I'm excited to talk about that today because I feel like you've kind of developed this method, which you call relationally driven homeschooling, and it's just, it's so good. So will you just talk about what that is, what you see relationally driven homeschooling as being?
Yeah, well, I think finally I'm arriving at something that, like you're saying, like it's appealing, and it's taken me years to get here. This is not where I started. I started off reading a lot of like the methodology kind of books and feeling really excited to homeschool my kids. And I knew like on principle, this is what I wanted to do. And then we started and it was hard.
Yes.
Really, really hard. And it was a battle. Like there was a period of time when we could not get through a math lesson that didn't last over 2.5 hours. And there weren't tears like from me and the child. Like,
yes.
It was really hard. So at some point I kind of lost steam and felt like, why am I doing this? Wouldn't they be better off somewhere else so that I can just like receive them home and welcome them and kind of come alongside them in a different way? Should I be the primary teacher if it's causing this kind of a strain between us and it's this hard? So I definitely reached that kind of bottom point several years ago, I would say two to three years ago. And I just felt like I could kind of give it up because it really wasn't what I thought that it would be.
Yeah. And you were in a homeschool program at that point also, like a one-day program that they would kind of dictate a little bit of the curriculum and the homework and that kind of thing too.
Definitely. And I thought when I started, I needed that. I thought I can handle like the math and the teaching them how to read and that kind of stuff. But I probably need some help figuring out what the rest of the structure should look like. And in allowing that help in, I think I took on philosophies and homework and things that really were never part of my vision. But then because they were prescribed, we had to do them. And that added stress. That took up time. There were days when we were in school until like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And that just felt, it felt torturous. It felt torturous to me. It felt torturous to them. It was not fun. So something kind of felt like it had to give. And I just assumed it would be the homeschooling. I thought, we're not going to keep doing this because this is not what I thought it would be.
Yeah.
So something did give, and it ended up being the program we were affiliated with. And then I was really nervous about taking on science and history and writing. I thought, man, can I teach my kids how to write? I don't know if I can do this. Can I do all of these subjects? I just, I was so nervous about it, but it, something in that transaction, it just gave me all the freedom I needed to really fully embrace like who I was created to be as a homeschooler and not have any artificial anything coming down on me saying do this and this and this. It was just so, it was terrifying, but it was also so freeing to realize like I was fully equipped to do this. And as I prayed for each child, I got different direction and I knew what to do. And as I sort of walked into that, suddenly those things that were so hard and so terrible, they were still, I mean, math is still there and math is definitely still a challenge subject, but I approach it very, very differently now than I did years ago. I don't feel like we have to get this done. We have to check this off or we're not doing a good job.
Yeah.
Now I feel like we may not get it done today. That's okay. But how are we doing? Like, are we still getting along? Is there still tension there? I kind of measure the success of that math lesson on how the child and I are feeling about each other, how they're feeling about themselves. If they feel completely defeated, then maybe they did something that was a little too hard, or maybe they need that challenge and they need me to come alongside them in a different capacity, you know, as more of like a coach or encourager that they're doing something hard. But that takes a lot of really knowing my kids and spending that time with them. I've seen my role as teacher become more that than checking things off a list.
Which has been so beautiful to watch from the outside in, because I saw you and your frustration with the program you were in and all of that. And then that fear in you when you broke away from it. But then it was like you could see the weight lifting off your shoulders and the excitement and like, wow, like this isn't anybody else's now. This is really ours and we can make it look the way that we want to. And then from there, you just crafted such a beautiful way of doing things.
That's so nice of you to say. I feel like school is as fun for me as it is for them. It's truly life-giving. It's just a fun place to be. We will miss it in the summer. We'll still definitely do some things because it's just a great way for us to connect.
Yeah, which I don't think most homeschoolers feel that way. I know I don't a lot of the time. It's like, when can we get through this so that we could connect in other ways? Because yeah. it's not fun to connect over math and stuff. But I want to get to more of that in a second, because we recently mm-hmm. had a great conversation about like how to deal with kids when they're being resistant and stuff. But I want to hear more of kind of like the methodology of relationally driven homeschooling, what it looks like, what inspired it, how did you get there, like what resources did you pull from and that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, and I really feel like so much of this, like I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I've read really good books. Yeah. I have been at that point where I felt sort of that despair about homeschooling does not look like what I envisioned it would look like. And maybe that means I'm failing. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this at all. At that point, the right books came right into my lap. For instance, Teaching from Rest by Sarah McKenzie was huge. And then Caught Up in a Story by Sarah Clarkson, another one that was just really encouraging to stay along the path of reading and reading and reading to my kids, which is something that we definitely enjoy doing together. And then I read another book, Deconstructing Penguins. I don't remember the author, but that one I felt like kind of pulled me out of the box because I love to read. I've always been a reader, but during this time where school was very tense, I kind of lost touch with a lot of things that I love to do, like writing, reading. Those kind of things were sort of on the back burner because there was a stressor in my life and it was getting through the school day, and then I was exhausted. So when I read that book, it just opened my eyes to the fact that every fictional story that you read, the author is telling a deeper story. And there are themes. There are things that you need to kind of uncover and sort of be a detective to get to. And you use all sorts of literary tools to get there. And this book sort of walks you through all of that. And that just kind of made me excited. I thought, could we just read some good books and like see what happens and maybe take a breather from the heavy structured get this done or you're not accomplishing schooling and just like sit down on a couch together and enjoy each other and then have some conversations that go a little deeper. And could we just do that? So as we started to do that, life sort of flowed right back into our time. And I just felt this impactful shift from just hating it, honestly, just feeling like this is not something I want to do, to starting to just enjoy my kids some more. And as I ask them questions, and the whole idea is that you do not know the answer. You are asking questions and you're listening and you're letting the kids do the work, but you can't go into it with, well, this is what I'm trying to drive at, so I will lead you. You're on this exploration too. And that just, it just became so fun. We were laughing a lot because the personalities that God has placed in our family are so vastly different. Yeah. And it was just so fun. So that's kind of how we ended that first year that I'd kind of broken away from the previous program. And I thought, this is what I want. I got a taste of what I wanted enough that I thought, I'm going to keep with this. But I know that I have to change everything to kind of get this and not put all this structure on myself, not be too type A when I approach school, because that doesn't always cultivate relationships. Sometimes it pushes people away a little bit. And that was the opposite of what I wanted. So those are some of the books that I read. And what I started to see is that like life and excitement and those things started coming back into my heart. I just felt excited to be homeschooling again when I read Teaching from Rest particularly. And she has some quotes that just really stood out to me, because in a nutshell, she says, when you're in a crisis situation with a subject, you always choose your child. And I realized I had not been choosing my child. I had been choosing math. I had been choosing this. I had been forcing the child to come alongside my, you know, my artificial structure of this is successful in a homeschool day. And it was causing all this tension. So the answer felt so simple that I need to choose my child. Yeah. And if I can choose my child, then the problem is this structure. It's not the child, you know? So anyway, that really started to shift things.
So you took from these resources and then you executed it for your family. So how did you craft that and make that work for you guys?
Okay. Well, I think one thing that we do is that the core of our, what most people call the core, the math and language arts, I determine that by each child, what would it them best. None of my kids use the same math curriculum, for instance. Mm-hmm. There is one that really suits each one of them best. And I think that's one of the best privileges of homeschooling. In a regular classroom, you have, I don't know, 20, 25 kids, and you have one curriculum that has been selected that needs to reach all of those kids and their learning styles. But at home, we get the option. There are so many options. It's overwhelming. So yeah. I just try to really simplify that and think, I don't think I can go wrong. Yeah. And if it doesn't work this year, we'll shift next year. So I don't put a whole lot of stake in what we choose other than I want to see progress. And my goal with math and I would even say grammar is that they're working towards independence, that they're doing a hard thing and they're doing it to the best of their ability. And I'm training them to be able to do that on their own. So yeah. That's kind of how I approach those subjects. They are important and they're foundational, and we do them every day and we do them first thing in the morning, but they're not even what I really consider our school day. They're just yeah. kind of sort of like chores. It's kind of chores are disciplining their body. And the core subjects are disciplining their mind. So that's kind of how I approach those. I wouldn't say this is what we use for math, and it's just such a great curriculum. And I would say use what you feel like is best for your child. Just be doing math every day. You know, yeah. I mean, I think you really can't go wrong with so many options out there. So that's kind of how I approach those subjects. And when I started homeschooling, I thought that was everything. I thought I had to pick the right math curriculum for my kindergartner, or yeah. I was going to fail them when they yeah. wanted to go to college. But that has really shifted. I feel like that's, I mean, we've talked about that before. I just don't yeah. feel like that's even our curriculum. That's just something yeah. we have to do every day. So we do it.
And I think even just that perspective on those core subjects is so freeing. Like, it's just another chore, and that's not the goods of what homeschooling is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, our education, it should flow from a life that is lived well and not you trying to fit math or grammar or those subjects into your life. It should all kind of flow together. So when I encompass it in the idea that I'm training their minds and it's a discipline and it's kind of discipleship towards doing hard things and doing them well, then uh-huh. it changes everything for me. We study math because God is the God of order. Out of chaos, he brings structure, he brings organization. Dependable, consistent laws govern us. These are important things for us to know. We learn how small we are. We learn their absolute truths. They need that. So yeah. a little bit of that every day, I just don't blow its importance out of the water. That's just one small thing that we do. And yeah. and the same really for grammar and writing. We study those because God has given us the ability to communicate, and I want them to be able to communicate well. But a way, like, for example, a way that I try to kind of incorporate those subjects into our life is I have these vintage flashcards of pronouns, and I love to just, like, decorate with them because pronouns are so beautiful to me. They describe relationship. Huh. And I mean, I think what better word to put in your home than ours? Like, it just connotes belonging, you know, it makes them feel like this is something that we share. And so yeah. I like to sprinkle those words around. I like to kind of incorporate those types of subjects into our daily life and not just relegate them to this is just get it done. Just yeah. finish it. It does follow us, and it should, and they should see that. But I also just don't want that to be everything in our day because it's just a very small component.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Yeah. And then thinking from there, how you're able to just kind of have that be a discipline of your day, and mm-hmm. they just know that they have to get it done. But then getting mm-hmm. to the goods of your homeschool day, I yeah. mean, the true heart of it, to have seen you guys walk through the year that you did, and you were studying Abraham Lincoln and the mm-hmm. Civil War, and then mm-hmm. the trip that you took and the things that your kids said and how in love they were with everything. I mean, you've got to go into that because it's just proof of how it worked, that you could just sit down and read these amazing books with your kids and have good discussions about them, but they're forming relationships with those characters and those people from history. And it was a game changer.
Mm-hmm. It really was for the kids and for me. And I think for my husband too, to see like how much we're enjoying it and how it came to life. That was what was so neat is last year we really learned we love history. Like as a little family unit, we really enjoy history. And that was kind of a fun discovery.
Yeah.
And it just has propelled us this year to, you know, build on that. And who are we going to learn about now? So when I say relationally driven homeschooling, one of the facets of that is thinking about characters in history as relationships that we can form. When you read biographies, when you study their life, these are relationships I want my kids to have kind of as anchor points in history to think, like, for my boys, everything will always go back to Abraham Lincoln because we did this full year study of his life with the Genevieve Foster book that kind of takes from when he was born to when he dies, and you sort of look through his eyes at the world, and we just immerse ourselves in that.
Yes.
And it was exciting to see how much they really got it and it did form with him. So we took a trip to Gettysburg to kind of encompass the year and sort of capitalize on everything we had learned. It was all pretty much U.S. history. So we thought we need to like see this. It's here. It's accessible to us. So we traveled to Gettysburg, and on the way we stopped in Springfield, Illinois, and we were able to visit all sorts of Lincoln Museum and his final resting place. And it was there that one of my kids turned to me and said, I feel like I'm saying goodbye to a friend. And I know that's what you're referring to about the just, and that was kind of that moment for me. I thought, gosh, what a privilege to get to do this, to get to walk through this with my kids and watch them develop these relationships. And we felt so close as a family because we had studied this together. And I just think that's what homeschooling can be. I hope to replicate that every year. It's not something I know that I can do because that just kind of felt magical even to us. That was just really special. But yeah, it was where I feel like we sort of stretched our wings and learned we love history. So that is really kind of my backbone. Everything comes back to where are we in history? I pull in literature, I pull in science. We do as much biography reading as we can, as much living books as we can get our hands on. So that's kind of how I put it together. We start with history, and then I try to see how much on a timeline, you know, how much history I want to cover in a year. Yeah. And then I just start researching who was writing classic literature then in art, who was painting then, composers, and just try to kind of pull it all together. And there are so many great resources for people who have already done that and have done a much better job than I could do that you can just glean from.
Even just the Genevieve Foster book as your core, is it shows you these amazing, beautiful drawings that tell you who the artists were at the time and who the composers were and all of that, which to me, as I've been preparing our year for next year, which we're going to be back where you were, we're going to be in the Abraham Lincoln book, that alone has been such a resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has done a masterful job of even those pages where you see the collage of all the people who were alive at that time. If you have a visual learner, wow, like you just can see them and you can see how they interrelate. And I think it's powerful when history kind of comes alive that way and you see how small you are. And I think that's what history should do, is it should train our eyes to see how big God is, how small we are, and what a privilege it is to be living in the time period that we're living in and to be kind of searching for the heroes throughout history and studying them and getting to know them. So,
Well, and like you said, Abraham Lincoln has now become an anchor point for your kids. Like, they know when he lived, they know what was happening at the time that he lived, and everything else you learn can be plotted in their mind in comparison to when he was here. You know,
exactly.
That's pretty amazing. And I just think it's amazing too that it goes to show, without doing a bunch of projects and reports and all of this stuff, that your kids can really know this information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't do a lot that kind of work. We do a lot of conversations, and then we love to like have poetry times and kind of get together and just discuss. And I specifically ask the boys, well, what do you think What do you think Abraham Lincoln would think about that? I want them to be able to enter somebody else's mindset and look at the world through a different perspective. And it doesn't have to be Lincoln, but Lincoln is just somebody that they're very familiar with his take on the world. So he, like I said, he's that anchor point, but anyone we're studying, I like to just throw them random questions and kind of see how they do.
Yeah. Well, and it makes it so much more personal when you're having to put yourself in their shoes.
Mm-hmm. And really know someone.
Yeah.
And think through, like, well, why would they feel that way? What in their life would have led you to think that they would be opposed to this or that they would support this? And so we do a lot of that, a lot of discussing. Sometimes I have them write about those kinds of things, but we do a lap book. They don't mind those kind of projects. And I love that we have like something that we did, like we did this, we put this together. It's like visual evidence that we walked through something. But I know that those are sort of activities. Those are not, I know that we have gone a lot deeper and that's kind of hard to show, you know, at this point. I think that fruit really comes later on in their lives, you know, that they can critically think, that they can be empathetic to other people's perspectives, and they have been trained to think as other people. I think that'll just kind of come to show later. So much of what I feel like I'm doing now will show fruit later. It's sort of a walk of faith to believe that, you know, I mean, it really is. It really is. And that's hard. I mean, sometimes I really struggle because I don't have boxes to check off all the time. I have conversations that don't fit in a box, or I have really good heart to hearts that don't fit in a box. And I have to be okay with that. I have to know that my end goal is that I want my boys to have good relationships with me, relationships with their siblings. I want them to feel safe to kind of explore who they're made to be, and relationships with different people in history, relationships with different subjects. I want them to be kind of fully versed, but a lot of that is just walking out what I know I am to do now without a lot of evidence showing that we're on the right path.
Yeah.
I think everybody who homeschools probably feels that way. Like it's, So that's why people like Sally Clarkson are so important to me, because she has done it, and she's made it to the other side, and her kids are wonderful people, and she has relationship with them, and by the world standards, they've been successful. By her personal standards, they've been successful. It's so good to see that, and to see that they enjoy coming home, and they still talk about the books that they read and that they still read together. I mean, I just think that's so wonderful to be able to look to some of those examples.
Yeah, it's totally beautiful. And I think that also you're saying, you know, there's not a whole lot tangible to be able to show for this, but something you do, which I love with your planner, is instead of so much writing what you plan on doing, like you do have your plan, but in your planner, you record what you actually did that day. And even though it's just your words, like it's this journal that you can look back on of those conversations and those moments that are harder to document in any other tangible way.
Exactly. It's kind of more like a scrapbook, but I think back on the day at the end of the day, and I think, well, what did we do? And I write those things down. And I'll just be honest, sometimes I put checks by them. I did that. I did that because I can't completely like get rid of that little type A part of me that, that needs to see the checks. So sometimes that's how I do that. But it's so good to have a record and see, like, you know, when you're feeling those doubts, which we all do, and I definitely do, to look back on a week and say, whoa, we did so much. We actually did way more than I think. But if I had set it up differently, I could also look at that same week and feel like I'd failed if I had all these things I hadn't checked off. So I think a lot of it is how you approach your week and how you approach yourself. If you're gentle with yourself as a homeschooling mom, or are you task-oriented and you want to see productivity and you want to see that your kids are doing this and this. And that's important. I mean, I think there's a place for that. But I also think it's our job to be governing their hearts. Nobody else is doing that. And so I want to make sure that I'm making that the primary thing.
Yes. Well, and I think, like, for someone like me, I'm an ENFP, like, it's good for me to have a very solid plan where I know what our goal is for how many lessons we're trying to get done in math and that kind of thing. But to always keep in mind, like, that's a good accountability tool just to keep me motivated if there aren't those roadblocks in the way, to just to keep me on task. But
yes.
To still allow for room of this can be adjusted. Like, this isn't set in stone. And to give myself the leeway when I'm planning of not trying to do 5 math lessons a week, like, not even planning for that in the first place. So that there's already that buffer room built into my plan to allow for that relational aspect of things.
Yep. And that's, I mean, that's grace, and to allow ourselves to operate in grace, you know, and our primary motivation is that we're operating in grace and offering grace to the people in our home.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really humbling to think the only thing that I can really control in my homeschool day is the atmosphere of my home and my own faithfulness to this job. I cannot control them. I cannot control how much they accomplish. I can't control their attitude. I mean, I can train their attitudes later. I can discipline their attitudes later, but I can't control it. The only thing I have to control is the atmosphere. So I try to put as much energy towards that atmosphere as possible. And I have found that as I do that, the relationships really follow behind. And so does the education.
Yeah.
When relationships are good, when we're feeling close to each other, when we're listening to each other, and they feel cared about,
yes,
it just goes much more easily. And so that is definitely where I try to prepare and focus, is really the atmosphere. How can I take this thing we have to do and make it something that's not painful to do? Maybe I can add a really fun snack, or maybe I can play some music or light a candle, or I can have a smile on my face. What do I have to do to get to the point I have a smile on my face? And sometimes that's take like a 5-minute break.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I mean, just being real, like, there's a lot of times it's me. I'm the problem, and I have to remove myself and kind of get it together, because I can't expect something of my kids if I am not able to do the same and be sort of mature enough to see, I need a minute. This is really hard. And let me kind of breathe and pray and come back out with a smile on my face. And it just does, it goes a lot better when I can kind of have a handle on me. And when I recognize my faithfulness to teach them is a big component. Am I prepared? Am I taking it seriously? Or am I, you know, go do your math, go do this? You know, am I just sort of expecting something from them that I'm not living up to myself? You know, I just, I want to make sure that I'm prepared and I'm ready for them. This is my job. And as I approach it that way, it's just been remarkable how they follow suit. I mean, the atmosphere in our home is a huge, huge component to homeschooling.
That's just, it's beautiful. And I mean, I've been to your home, so I know what the lovely atmosphere is like, but it's every bit as lovely as everyone will see in those Instagram pictures. Like, it really is. You just feel like you're being wrapped in a big warm blanket when you walk into your house. Like, it's just a place of peace and joy and love. And not that there isn't chaos, because kids are kids and they rough house and they do those kinds of things, you know, but it just, you know, like, there's an assurance when you're in your house that there is grace, like, just grace abounds all through your house. And it's beautiful to watch. And I think that the relational aspect of things comes easier for you than some. Like, I mean, when I was talking with Misty Winkler, and we were both saying how, like, we have to consciously remind ourselves, like, it would be good to greet your child with a smile in the morning and, like, say, hi, I love you, how are you, you know, like, instead of just jumping into the day. You know, some of us have to put a little bit more effort into it, but it's so inspiring to see someone like you that it does come easier for, but that you also put so much effort into what that looks like. And just what you're saying about, like, being prepared for your kids and putting that conscious thought into how you prepare that atmosphere, it's just inspiring. And I just love hearing about it. Okay, we are going to take a short break right here to hear a quick little word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by PlateJoy. So this is a really great and super helpful meal planning service that I want to tell you guys a little bit about. So, you know, we all want to eat better, but actually doing it, especially with a family, is a different story. You can spend hours searching online for recipes, trying to find meals that match your family's tastes and your health goals, and that don't take forever to make, and that won't leave you with a huge grocery bill at the end of the day. And that's why you need to try PlateJoy, the meal planner that makes healthy eating easy. PlateJoy designs custom meal plans to fit your unique health goals, taste preferences, and your busy schedule. Take PlateJoy's lifestyle questionnaire to choose from dozens of different options, including low-carb, Whole30, paleo, gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan, vegetarian, and many more. You can even add a weight loss or fitness goal, exclude any ingredient that your family doesn't like, or request freezer-friendly meals for super busy weeknights. PlateJoy uses 50 different data points to create meal plans that are a perfect match for you, with as many healthy, delicious recipes as you'd like each week. You'll also get a grocery list that cuts your shopping time in half and that keeps track of what you already have in your pantry to reduce your food waste. And it's super helpful for your budget as well. You can shop for yourself or in a lot of cities. In fact, 30 cities nationwide, you can get ingredients delivered same day right to you. So visit PlateJoy.com and you can get 10 days of meal plans for free and enter the code LOVELY in all capital letters to save $10 off a membership. So thank you to PlateJoy for sponsoring this episode. And now let's jump back in with Katie Duckett. Okay, so like you were saying about how you deal with your own attitude, I want to talk for a second about how you deal specifically with a child when they are being resistant to a certain subject or school in general. Like we were recently talking about when I just came to you like, you know, I can't get this kid to do math. Like he just throws his hands in the air and, you know, but we're so close to the end of the year. Like we had like one chapter left. It was like, just let's just get through this, man. You know, but you had such wise advice about really getting down to the deeper issues of their character and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So what do you do?
Yeah, well, I work in practice. This is not something that like I always have this down, but when a kid is presenting some real defiance or some really ugly behavior or whining or whatever it is, to have the presence of mind to know, first of all, this isn't personal.
Yeah.
And second of all, this isn't about math. Yeah. Those two things really help me because I think there's something going on within the heart of this child that, thank goodness we're homeschooling, because I'm seeing it. If we didn't homeschool, it'd come out somewhere else. But because I'm with my kids 24 hours a day, I get to see those things and I get to see them right away.
Yeah.
And so that's, I try to be thankful for that. I think I'm so glad that they're safe with me and that I get to see this right away. It's not developing into something more full blown. And then if we need to get through the lesson, we get through it and it might be ugly. If we can take that space and if we have the margin in our school year or our day where I can say, we need to pull back and work on whatever this character issue is that I don't always know what it is until I pray. But after I pray, I'm usually pretty sure that, let's say it's immaturity or it's the lack of self-discipline. It's always been revealing itself in other places as well. And sometimes it just takes pulling back and reflecting on it and praying about it to see that. But then once I see that, I know what we're dealing with. I know it's this. And then I just try to think of a game plan for this. And I try to make sure that in my mind, I've separated it from math. It's not about math. It's never about math. Never is about math. It's always about the heart. So I have to physically and mentally force myself to separate them because it's really easy to get wrapped up in the moment and fight back or insist, use my authority and insist that they do it. And it's really ugly.
Yeah.
So for me, that's how I kind of get through it is I have to separate it. And once I separate it, I figure out with my husband kind of what's the best way to go after this. Sometimes it's, you know, if it's an immaturity, maybe it's extra work, extra hard work, extra labor or something like that until, or if it's laziness, maybe. But there's always something that I think is separate from whatever the school subject just reveals it. It's not the problem. But for a long time, I thought they went hand in hand. It's because they hate math. I need to change curriculums. This isn't working. But it really isn't about math. It just is the ugliness within coming out, and we get the privilege of seeing it, and we can pray about it and figure out, you know, with the Holy Spirit and with our husbands, how to best handle it.
And that's so good to hear, I think. Really realizing, like, okay, these are character issues, and there are deliberate things that you can do to be addressing and training those issues that are totally separate from school.
Mm-hmm.
And that will eventually make the schoolwork easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it ties in with the atmosphere and all that, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all of homeschooling is really about character. And when you come right down to it, you know, it's heart training. The education is definitely a component, but if you don't have the discipline and the maturity and good habits, you'll never get to that point. I mean, I think it's just all a process of getting them to the place where they're able to sort of self-study.
Yeah.
And that is discipline. That's just a matter of being diligently trained day by day to do a hard thing until it's no longer hard. And then you go after the next one until it's no longer hard. And that's growing up. So
yeah. I think just even that, though, is so encouraging for moms and filled with grace and freeing to know there are ways to overcome this other than, like what you were saying, changing math curriculum or just like there's ways to embrace it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the final thing I kind of want to wrap up with is
what
does a day even look like in the Duckett house? Like, how does this actually play out for you?
Okay. Well, I'm an early riser, as you know.
Yes, I like to...
We're very opposite that way.
I leave my messages for you late at night, and then I get to wake up to your response in the morning. It's perfect.
Exactly. So it fuels me to get up early. And so I do. And I love that quiet time. But my kids really don't get up until between 7 and 8, somewhere between 7 and 8. And my 2-year-old might be later than that. So they get up and I usually have maybe some music playing, maybe not. I love classical music, so I like to play it, but I don't always. They get breakfast on their own. That's something that I have kind of opted out of,
which
has been really, really nice. Aids to a slow morning. They have chores that they do. They love Legos. They love kind of quietly playing together or looking through books or drawing maybe, you know, they kind of do their own thing. And then about 9 o'clock, we sort of start getting ready for school. We usually start around 10, but it's not set in stone. And then they do their independent stuff. While they're doing that, I work with my kindergartner. And that's about 2 hours that they're working independently, and often they need me. So we're always juggling, okay, if my 6th grader needs help with math, then I send my kindergartner off to watch the 2-year-old. And then, you know, it's always juggling.
Yeah.
If somebody were to like peer into my life at that point, I think they would be like, what is going on here? This is craziness. But at this point, we kind of have it worked out. Somebody's always helping somebody else and it kind of works. Then we have... We have lunch and then I kind of start reading, and we read history, a lot of read alouds, and that takes us 2.5, sometimes 2 hours. And as I'm reading, I have 3 boys, and they would not sit still and just be good little listeners. They have to be active. So they're drawing or usually they're playing with Legos. They love playing with Legos. Sometimes they're doing like a stop motion film with their Legos. I really don't care because I've learned, I make them narrate often. I'll just stop and say, Ben, what did I just say? And it's shocking how much they take in if I just let them be and do what they're doing, they're taking it in. So, and we just go as long as I can keep my kindergartner's interest. Sometimes he goes off and does his own thing, which is fine. But the big boys and I, we read usually about 2-2.5 hours. Yeah. And then some days we just forego history and reading, and we do, like, after lunch, we'll do a tea time. And I know that sounds Well, unless people are familiar with Brave Rider, that probably sounds very strange to do with little boys. But we just really enjoy pairing food with snacks and pairing discussions with snacks. So it's really just a glorified, I make tea for myself and they eat brownies or they eat cookies or something and we sit at the table as opposed to the couch. So it's just kind of changing locations.
Yeah.
We call it tea time. So we either are having discussions and eating or we're reading most days. Then I send them out to play. If they can go outside, they go outside pretty much regardless of the weather. I send them outside.
That's
so
nice.
They play for hours. We have a trampoline and they have to get it out. Like boys, they just have to get all that craziness out. I've kept them cooped up for too long and I know that end point and it varies, but then I just, you know, they go out and play. So that's kind of how the school day works. So it's really pretty low key.
Yeah.
I always know what we're going to do. You know, I kind of have an overview. I know what book is coming next. When we finish a book, I'll do like a book club discussion, and that's usually tea time or something. And maybe if I have like an inspiration for an activity or like sometimes I pull out watercolors and we'll do that. But if it's too much work, it won't actually happen. So it has to be really simple. And sometimes that inspiration strikes me that morning and I get really excited about it and I do it. But if I'd had it written down, I'd be like, oh, I don't want to do that. So I know myself well enough to know like I have to give myself some creative leeway in there.
Yeah.
And that really works. If one of the kids has a great idea, we run with it. So I have the overarching structure, but then within that, there is a lot of flexibility.
Yeah. And it's so simple, but so deep.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what we found is that the simpler it is, the deeper we go. You know, the more structure there is, it's like there's less time for what I consider like the really important things. Mm-hmm. So I'm very careful if I'm going to add anything in that it's going to be beneficial that way, because I would not for anything hamper or put too much on them that they don't have room to think about this book. You know, I want them to have space to really reflect on this book. And when I start to see them using Legos to kind of tell the story, or when they're in their free play, when they're outside and they're doing something, some scene from that book, I know that it's gotten in them.
Yeah.
And then they're like this little army of brothers who have studied the same thing. And all of a sudden, the whole neighborhood is doing it. So it's kind of fun
awesome.
To see.
Yeah.
To see like that influence that other kids are just so willing to come along. A great idea. So I'm
the
just
kids
kind
are
of
like little history warriors leading the charge through the neighborhood. I love it. I love it.
It's fun. I just think of myself as sort of spreading that feast. I mean, that's definitely, I know people have heard that terminology, but I just love that concept of that what I'm doing at home is controlling that atmosphere, is spreading that feast. And then I just love to see where it goes, because if I were to guess, I would be wrong every time. It's so exciting to see them and their creativity come alive, you know, with just a really great idea. That's all they need is a great idea and just take it off. You know, they take off with it.
Well, I think that's a really good place to wrap things up. I hope everyone is feeling just super inspired and like they can make their homeschool look like that. Like that really can be a reality. But I'm planning on having Katie involved in some things throughout the fall to be continuing to share this goodness, because I have a feeling a lot of moms will want to know more. But you can always go to her Instagram and interact with her there and see the amazing stuff that she puts out. She's going to be putting out a whole series, right, Katie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am planning on kind of putting out a series of like how and why I structure things and sort of the tenets of why I'm doing school the way I'm doing them and that kind of stuff.
Yes, I love it. I'm so excited to see it. And so, but to wrap things up, before we're totally done,
okay,
I have to ask you my stock questions.
Oh my gosh, I should have, I knew this was coming. I've heard your podcast. Of course I have. And I didn't think, okay, so this is going to be like really just,
off the cuff.
Yeah.
That's the best way. Okay. Candles or essential oil diffuser?
I have both. I have both. And
yes.
I love essential oils. I love diffusing them. Candles, though, set a different kind of atmosphere.
Yes,
so, I mean, it just depends on what I'm going for. But I definitely use both.
Okay. Cloth napkins or paper?
Okay, so I have both.
Okay.
Also, kind of depends on the atmosphere. If we're doing a tea time or, you know, a nice dinner, I definitely pull out the cloth. But on an everyday basis, it's definitely paper.
Okay. City or country?
Country.
Okay. Paper or digital?
Oh, paper. 100% paper, yeah.
Yes. Okay, shopping. Would you rather do it online or in store?
In the store.
All right. It's 4 o'clock or whatever time you're making dinner and you need a mental break. Do you listen to a podcast or to music?
Music.
Okay.
Music. Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite music to turn to?
Well, classical or, yeah, it's usually classical. I love Paco Bell's Canon in D. That is okay. Just my favorite. Yeah.
And you're such a, she, you guys, she's been a caterer and everything. I mean, that's a whole nother conversation I need to have you on the show for, like just your homemaking, that I could just picture you like in there with your dinner and your Paco Bell's Canon and your wine. And like,
oh,
yes.
It is not that glamorous. I'm telling you. Not at all. But yeah.
Well, I like to think so in my head. Okay. Chocolate, milk or dark?
Oh, okay. So I want to say dark because I feel like that's it's
the
milk.
Right answer.
It's milk. Uh-huh. It's milk.
That's wrong.
I know.
And there have been other guests who've been on the show who said milk, and I just say, okay, next question. But you are a dear friend, and I can say you are wrong.
Well, you can keep working on me, but
okay,
yeah, I'm at milk right now. Okay.
Okay. Sports or no sports?
Oh, Mackenzie, 100% sports.
Such a silly question to even ask. I know the answer, but we laugh often about how sporty Katie is and how not sporty I am.
I love your not sportiness. It's so cute.
Well, and you're such a like cheerleader whenever I do get a sports term correct or like know who someone is. You're like, oh, that's amazing. Look at you. That I feel really good about my knowledge of sports. Okay. This is another question. Like, I feel silly asking you these questions because I know the answer, but I will ask it anyway for the sake of what this is. So Periscope or live broadcasting?
Oh my gosh.
Would you rather broadcast or watch?
Watch, please. Yes. Never, ever, ever broadcast. Yeah.
Hardly ever even comment because right? Some attention may be drawn to
right,
yourself.
Exactly.
Okay. Favorite movie?
Okay. Legally Blonde.
Okay.
Definitely. That's my honest answer. I could probably give you like a more,
I like that honest
okay.
answer.
All right. Okay.
Go with
I'm
it.
Just going to go with it then. Legally
okay.
Blonde.
Okay. All right. So, if you were to put yourself on the crunchiness spectrum, and 0 is totally not crunchy, but 10 is singing Kumbaya by the fire with dreadlocks and your legs unshaven, where do you fall?
Where do you think I fall? One.
I don't want to answer negative. For you.
Can I be on the scale? Can I just be a one
yes,
or something?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You can be on the scale. You use cloth napkins sometimes.
Right. Exactly.
So and essential oils.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
So
I've
you're not
some.
You're
yeah.
not on the scale.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yes. So we'll just put generally on there.
Barely, but yes, on there.
But it's good. You make sourdough bread from scratch every morning. You know, there are things. Give yourself some credit, woman.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'll take it. I'll take a little credit. I'll be on that scale.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, it was so much fun having you on.
Oh, it was really fun to do this. I'm glad you strongly encouraged me to do it.
Strong-armed you.
At it.
Yes. For many, many months, people. No, actually, I think I first mentioned this to you before I even started the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said I wanted to have you on. So that was like nearly 2 years ago. So
mm-hmm.
look yeah, what.
I can't even believe we did it, but we
I
did
know,
it.
I know. We did it. And I loved having you on. And I plan to have you on again. So just
oh gosh, well.
Buckle up. It'll be good. We'll do a whole homemaking episode. It'll be amazing. Okay.
Oh.
Well, thank you so much, and I will talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you again to all of you who've been leaving ratings and reviews in iTunes. It makes such a difference. Keep telling your friends about the show. And we just so appreciate all the support and all the emails. I love to connect with you guys. So make sure that you find me on social media. You can pretty much find me everywhere at Bold Turquoise. I would love to be able to talk with you guys more, especially as we're wrapping up the season. I'd love to hear about things that you want to hear about and stuff you would like to see in the future with Cultivating the Lovely and Bold Turquoise. One last thank you to Katie and to Plate Joy, and be sure you head over to boldturquoise.com/TLHC so that you can make sure you're hearing about the homeschool course when it comes out, and be sure to go to boldturquoise.com/32 to get the notes for this episode. You can get all the links to Plate Joy and Katie's Instagram and all of that good stuff and be able to find it all really easily. So thank you so much for joining me this week. Until next time, go be bold and gracious.